What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast, giving you a break from the bonfire of global society. Coming up, Mark Robbins sacked. Let them all come down to the den and get beaten. Pilgrims punish Pompey in the Dockyard Derby. There's more pain in the arse for Rangers. Five-star Wickham and plenty more besides. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And it's around about that time of the week where we talk all things Football League. It's me, Matt Davis Adams. I am joined by Adrian Clark. How are you doing, Clarky?
Hello. Yeah, well, good. Very busy week continues. But yeah, it's great to kick off the pod with a little bit of breaking news. I love it.
Yeah. Breaking news, not really a thing in the podcast world, but for us, it is very much breaking news. We are going to talk about that shortly, but not before I introduce Sam Parkin. Sam, you've been just as busy as Clarky. Are you well?
I am, and I've got the Coventry job. There's some breaking news for everyone. Looking forward to getting on the M40.
Yeah, well, that should give us some good
interest. Wait, I live 10 minutes from Coventry. I'll come in as your number two, mate.
Yeah. The dream team.
We would be number two, wouldn't we?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say nothing. Right, before we get into that breaking news, then let me ask you for a favour. Can you leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods? Really helps us grow the show and other people find it. You can find us on X at EFL What the and What the EFL on Instagram and TikTok. And we are delighted to say that we've partnered up with Quinbet for this season. To celebrate that, they have enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet worth up to £50 and 50 free spins. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions/sports-up-2-50. If that's too complicated to remember, just check the show notes and you'll see the link in there. It's 18 plus. And remember, always gamble responsibly. Check out gamcare.org. They are the leading provider for gambling support and they run the National Gambling Helpline. All right, let's get into that big breaking news then. As we record, it is 11:08 on Thursday morning. So we are half an hour removed from the following post from Coventry City, which says they've made the difficult decision to terminate the contract of Mark Robbins as manager. We thank Mark for all his achievements with us and wish him the best for the future. Hashtag PUSB. George Galloway, yes, that one, has simply replied, idiots, to the post. This is after Wednesday night's home defeat against Derby County in the Championship. Go on then, Sam, you flag this up to me. Give me your initial take.
Still surprised, but I think it's probably deeper than, you know, them losing a game that they would have expected to win at home and their position, current position in the league. I think there's been so much change, you know, at Coventry over the last 12 months, 18 months. So many big players have left. Jokeres, flavour of the month in the world at the moment. O'Hare, Hamer, McFadden, Kelly, to name but few. Casey Palmer. Game changers as well, you know, guys in the final third. And I suppose the way they finished last season, you anticipated them having had a season of Championship football, the likes of Sakamoto and Haji Wright hitting the ground running, and you know, probably got a competitive budget for the level and aspirations of the owner to be in the higher echelons, and that's clearly not happening. But I think it's a product of that. You know, a new squad, maybe not hitting the ground running, and also the changes in the backroom staff. Obviously, you know, Adi Virus is a former teammate of mine, someone who I've kept in touch with from time to time. Brilliant on the training ground, tactically very, very good. And I think having him depart, obviously, late in the day in the summer has probably affected things. But do I feel sorry for Mark Robbins? I do, to a degree, because he's had a brilliant run and he's done phenomenal work there. I think they've been brilliant to watch through the levels, you know, from the depths of having to play, you know, at St Andrews for that period and all the difficulties they've had off the pitch. He's managed it brilliantly. He's put together some outstanding sides, but football never stands still, doesn't it? Does it? So, yeah, it'd be fascinating to see where they go next. But I wasn't fully, just finally, Clarky, sorry, I know you'd be itching to get in. I wasn't fully on board with this was going to turn for Coventry when I went to their Luton game the other day. I felt that the problems were probably deeper than that and it may be a season of struggle. But I saw them perform brilliantly in all departments against Luton. So for that reason, I am surprised, given that they beat Middlesbrough. And then it's just this recent Derby defeat to dampen what was an improving mood. So I'm surprised from that degree, because I thought Mark Robbins, true to his word, looked like they were starting to turn things around. But yeah, lots gone on there. And yeah, maybe no real surprise that maybe they just need a change to freshen things up.
Yeah, if you're in the pro Robins camp, Clarkie, which clearly a lot of Coventry supporters are based on the initial reaction, you'll say this is a guy who's led us all the way from League Two to the brink of the Premier League, took us to an FA Cup semi-final last season, a Championship playoff final the season before that. But I guess, as Sam's kind of alluding to there, he's been there since 2016-17. Maybe it is going a little stale. They do have a tendency to start seasons slowly. It just feels like a bit of a strange time to do it, given that they'd won back-to-back games before that Derby defeat midweek.
I think he deserves better. I think he's had Coventry City on an upward trajectory season after season after season. And this, well, last season was the first downturn, wasn't it? But they were still very, very good, almost reached an FA Cup final. And then, of course, you know, they've started this season wildly inconsistently. So, and he's gone. So I think Sam's right. I think it's all to do with the change with AD Vivash and what happened there, how that impacted Mark Robins. Did he feel a little bit lost? Were the players, you know, reacting as well to him on his own or with the new coaches? Clearly not. I did feel that he was making some strange decisions towards the end of his tenure. Jack Radoni, obviously bad back pass in the game against Derby. He's never a left wing back. Never in a million years is he a left wing back. And just because he came on and did well there in a game a couple of weeks ago, he's kind of stuck with that. And I think it hung him out to dry a little bit. You know, he got dragged early in the game. So that was an odd decision for me. Chopping and changing the lineup a little bit more often than usual. He was getting a little bit flustered. But I'm with Sam. I saw them against Luton and they were really good. Obviously a brilliant result, albeit against 10 men against Borough, you know, last weekend. And now he finds himself out of work. I think it's really brutal and pretty harsh on him, even if he was certainly enduring the most problematic season of his time at Coventry City. So, yeah, look, I think he remained one of Coventry's best assets. But maybe, just maybe, it only really worked when it was the two of them. You know, maybe if there's no double act, there's no point carrying on. Maybe that's the lesson to be learned from this.
Mm. Well, look, he departs with a lot of credit in the bank. I'm sure he'll walk into another job. Goes down as one of Coventry's greatest managers. I'd like to see him take either the Bristol City or Swindon jobs at some stage, just so we could have Robins looking after the Robins. But we shall see on that one. So that was big breaking news from midweek. We're going to look back at some of the big games that happened next. And I guess that we might as well start with Coventry against Derby, seeing as we've been talking about them, but we'll focus on the Rams rather than Coventry, having spoke plenty about them already. Their first win, Clarkie, in five attempts. They've only lost one of six. I mean, you know, if I was a cynical, snarky Forest fan, I'd say it's so Derby to win 2-1 despite having one shot on target, but we shouldn't deny them of any credit.
Well, no. Look, it's a good away win, isn't it? It's a lucky away win, because the winning goal was offside, and Mark Robins are probably sat there right now thinking, "Bloomin' linesman, cost me my job."
Because, all right, Graham Taylor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. but it was, you know, I've looked at the goal this morning. You know, it wasn't 4 yards offside as Robins claimed, but it was certainly 1 or 2 yards offside. Jerry Yates from the flick on, and he goes up, runs on and scores. So they were fortunate to get that call and the win. But you've got to admire the resilience, haven't you? You've got to. They sort of changed it up a little bit, made lots of changes. Paul Warren, I think five changes. They went away from 4-3-3 to a back five. They showed Coventry a lot of respect, and they sort of dug it out. You know, they weathered the storm. The three centre-halves, really, really good. Nelson Phillips and Cashin. And in front, I think Ebu Adams has really come to the fore, hasn't he, at Derby under Paul Warren. He's become a bit of a favourite. Good. Lots of tackles, lots of interceptions, lots of sort of dual successes for him. And yeah, this was just a gritty win against a Coventry team that obviously found it difficult to break them down. So yeah, well played, Derby County. Caden Jackson, I've just talked about Jack Radoni never being a wing back in a million years. Well, Caden Jackson probably didn't want to play right wing back in this game for Derby, but he did a good job. You know, he sacrificed himself. He's a striker, really. He played there and sacrificed himself for the team and did a good job. And that I think sums up a really sort of resolute Derby win.
not so many of their supporters moaning about Paul Warne at the moment. He seems to pick things up for them. Now then, Sam, Luton versus Cardiff feels like a very midweek November-y fixture to me. It was your assignment on Wednesday night. Were Luton worth the win?
Luton were far and away the better side. In my opinion, Kaminski hardly had anything to do. I think two speculative efforts that he turned over the crossbar. Yeah, I was disappointed with Cardiff as an attacking force. I can see a lot of what Omar Ritz is trying to do with them and what he has done with them. There's some nice patterns. Front players clearly playing with confidence, but weren't able to make too many chances. Structure of the team looked okay. But they were blown away, really, by Luton's power in the second half. Everything that we've come to know about Luton really was evident. The directness of Doughty down the left-hand side, that was a continuous avenue for them to get joy. I think that Perry Ng was coming into midfield a little bit, kind of vacating the right-back role, and that was just a lovely sight, really, for Alfie Doughty to keep bombing down there. Two strikers pulled into that position at times as well. Get the goal for a set piece. Jacob Brown, a little bit of a surprise, came in for Adebayo to start a rare game. Scored a cracking header from a corner, and the advantage could have been greater. Adebayo had a great impact coming off the bench, and they defended very comfortably, actually. Cardiff went to a 4-4-2, couple of substitutes up front, Mate and Kanga, but didn't really feed them, and the game petered out. I thought, and I said it in the commentary, I thought it was a much bigger game for Luton last night. I thought Luton, given the performances, have improved, yet they've still had that bump in the road at Coventry and the 1-1 stalemate with West Brom. They needed to start putting some points on the board. And Cardiff have been brilliant under Eats, and no question, they've had a brilliant upturn. He probably deserves the gig. We'll see if that gets sorted out in the next few days. But this was a limp performance, and Luton, I think, I'm confident enough to say, I think have turned a corner. I think that's four, maybe five games now where the performance level has been, you know, 7 out of 10. Probably haven't got the points to show for it, but hopefully for Rob Edwards, that's a turning point, because I thought it was pretty commanding for a 1-0.
Yeah, and moves them out of the relegation zone. Oh, wait, what? Millwall are up to fifth. A fourth successive 1-0 win for the Lions saw them tame Leeds at the Den. They've won six of their last nine home midweek league games, including each of the last three by a 1-0 scoreline. Clarkie, it feels like we've been negligent in terms of piling credit upon Neil Harris and co. Should we redress that now?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, 4 1-0s in a row is a manager's dream, isn't it? It's absolutely perfect for Neil Harris. And of all the managers to achieve it, I think Neil Chopper is someone that would sort of appreciate it more than most, because he's all about the Millwall spirit, tapping into what they're about as a club and being resilient. And they've got their limitations. Yeah, the strikers still aren't scoring. Langstaff, you know, he's struggling in front of goal. Coburn came on in this game and, you know, he's not been full of goals either. They're still very reliant on a solid defence that has let in 5 goals in 12 games. Now, it's not just the defence, of course. It's a real team effort at Millwall. But I think that rear guard and midfield deserve a lot of credit. They've got good nous, haven't they? Lots of players that have played together now for quite a long time that know their way around the Championship, and they're showing it. Yeah, really are. And if they frustrated a Leeds team that you know, weren't quite at it. Maybe, I mean, they started the game really well, Leeds, but then they faded and got a little bit frustrated. What didn't happen for Pirou, Nonto, Aronson had a quiet game. And I think that's down to the hard work, application, discipline of a Millwall team that has a great shape. And surprise, surprise, they score from a free kick. It's a long ball pumped into the box. Jake Cooper, who seems to win every first contact whenever he goes up to head the ball, nods it down to Jafet Tanganga, his centre-half partner, and bang, they win the game 1-0 with 24% of the possession. Millwall only had two corners in the game. So Leeds did their job in that regard. Don't give corners away, you know, keep set pieces to a minimum, but they still managed to concede from one. So, this is trademark Millwall, this win. And once again, I've got to say, Leeds, when they come up against a team that's excellent in their off-the-ball shape and pressing and aggression, once again, Leeds run out of ideas. And as brilliant as they can be, that's a big problem. That's a big problem in their quest to get automatic promotion, in my opinion.
Yeah, first the Wade defeat at the season, but remember back to last year, they lost 8 away games, 6 by the the odd goal. So I think despite them being obviously better in that regard this season, I think some of those scars remain from last year and in the style of victory that Clarke is talking about there. Late subs from Farker again, inability to change things tactically to break down a deep line defence. So yeah, slight concerns there, but enormous credit to Millwall. And on my other championship work that I was doing this morning, done a quiz. George Saville, Jake Cooper, two of them in the six most appearances currently still playing in the championship, in the champ, guys. So
what I said wasn't rubbish.
No, vast experience. And I will add in Tanganga, who has had, every time I've seen him, a 9 out of 10. So if he can start contributing, he's got a few important goals, hasn't he? I remember him scoring at Southampton back end of last season. But, I mean, if he's going to contribute in the same fashion as Jake Cooper in the opposition's 18-yard box, I think they're going to do well to keep hold of him. It happens, doesn't it? A player dropping out of the top division, cruising it, and then all of a sudden, maybe like Kyle Walker-Peters, he'll find himself back in the Premier League and being able to cope at that level as well.
Well, maybe it'll be with Millwall. There you go. You've had your flowers, Millwall. Does anyone from Millwall want flowers? Possibly not. Good news for Leeds is they've got QPR at home at the weekend, and that is where we're going to start our Tuesday chat next. Sam and Adrian were both across Rangers' latest humiliation. Fair to say it hurt Sam more. Middlesbrough running riot at Loftus Road, winning 4-1. Mainly, I was there highlights-wise for Clarkey describing Ben Doak's wing wizardry. Enjoyed that tremendously. What did you make of the game, Adrian? Presumably, having only seen the highlights, I'm still going to say that QPR were rubbish and Middlesbrough beat them pretty easily.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Ben Doak, I called him Doak. But yeah, interesting. I like that. So it's a little bit like Ilias Chair Chair.
You're probably right, to be fair.
Yeah. Doak, interesting. But anyway, Burrow were class apart, in my opinion, from Queen's Park Rangers in the game. They rallied at various points just before halftime. They QPR forced a few saves out of Sinny Dieng. And at the start of the second half, they were competitive. But yeah, there was a difference in levels here. In quality, in my opinion, between the two sides, Ben Doak was superb down the right wing. Absolutely ripped Heverton Santos to pieces. He got dragged at halftime. And yeah, he wasn't quite as effective second half, but he looks a real prospect. Finn Azaz, really classy performer for Middlesbrough in the sort of pockets. Laid on a beautiful pass or low cross into the box for Tommy Conway to score. And yeah, it was, and Riley McGree, you know, he scored one and he produced the best blind pass that I've seen for a long time. He had his back to goal and he just sort of hooked it on, but it was the perfect pass for Latte Lap to go on and complete the scoring. So yeah, it was, I thought Middlesbrough played at a good tempo, played nice football, and thoroughly deserved their win. Queen's Park Rangers, it's just toothless. You know, they've got a weak central midfield. I know they've got a young boy in there, Morgan, at the moment. Field's been taken out. He's back in at centre half. So it's been disrupted. But yeah, quite a weak central midfield. Nothing up front. The wingers were a little bit lightweight in the game and they gave up a lot of chances. So I can't really pick out any positives for QPR. I don't know if Sam can. But yeah, for me, yeah, Burrow looked like a team destined for the playoffs. QPR, on the evidence of this, they look destined for the bottom three.
Well, Sam, you two scoffed when I asked if Marty Cifuentes was in danger of being the next man to get the Spanish Archer in the championship. Maybe that was because you both had some prior knowledge about Mark Robbins, but I'm looking at the table. It shows me QPR are bottom and they've won one of 14 games. He needs to turn it around pretty quickly, doesn't he? Or he's surely going to be under threat of losing his job.
Sorry, mate. They're away to Leeds at the weekend. Yeah, you've already said that, haven't you? That was rubbish. I think inevitably there's going to be pressure. I don't think it comes right now. They were still kind of singing his name a little bit in the tail end of the first half. I think it was probably prior to the Middlesbrough quickfire goals. But I still think there's some goodwill towards him. Reason for my optimism, I think there's five players that probably walk back into the starting 11. Obviously, Chair has not been at it as of yet and still looks hindered by injury. Obviously went off here with another niggle. So you can put Chair in the mix. You can put Dembele in there. You can put Cole back, Jake Clark-Salter, Frey, who was playing all right start of the season, and Kenneth Powell, who at left back has been a good player for Rangers. So I think it's only right that we wait for a few of those bodies to come back before you fully judge. But I can't disagree with anything Clarkie said there. I thought the difference in the plan, the rhythm, the composure on the ball between the two sides was alarming. How many times, Clarkie, was Steve Cook stood on the ball in the opening half an hour without an option to play it to, and then went long only to recognise very quickly that he hasn't got anyone up there who can keep hold of the ball in the opposition's half? It was incredible. And Sato, the wide left player, was actually better when he went to left back on Doak. So the winger, actually, when he went to fullback, showed some bright signs. So that was probably, you know, a good way of summing up QPR's performance. The goodwill towards the centre forward has evaporated. Salah, he did rally in the second half and had a couple of decent attempts, actually, but you're starting to feel sorry for him because he's not a physical threat at all and he can't get hold of the ball up against two physical centre half. So that's a big problem, and making chances is a huge problem. No surprise that it's an own goal that got them on the score sheet the other day. But final thing, just when I was leaving the ground, I thought QPR were poor rather than Middlesbrough were great. To be honest, it probably wasn't a 4-1. Middlesbrough were far and away the more coherent team with a better plan and better players. But QPR were wretched on the night, and things can only get better.
Yeah, the one thing they did all right for a period was pressing. They didn't sustain it, but when they did press Borough, they caused a few problems. Borough, to be honest, against a better team, would have gifted a couple of goals, I think.
Yeah, I thought that.
Because when they played out from the back, they didn't do it brilliantly. There was a few really loose balls, and I think other teams might have made them pay. So, yeah, they're not perfect, Borough, but you could see they were a level above Rangers, unfortunately.
Well, QPR are sandwiched in between Plymouth and Portsmouth in the relegation zone. It was Argyle who won the Dockyard Derby. Not sure if that is legitimate amongst participants, but it's certainly a moniker that I enjoy. I like it too. Yeah, anything that's alliterative is a winner with me. Sam, if Plymouth are staying up this season, it's going to be thanks to their home form, right? Fourth league win at Home Park this season, but not a goal that the Portsmouth centre-halves will look back on with any fondness.
No, and they were a little bit flaky, probably an understatement, in that game I did at Fratton Park against Sheffield Wednesday. They could have easily cost them a goal on that night. And yeah, I think it was McIntyre that missed the initial ball. Then obviously Paul doesn't cover himself in glory as well. No, I don't think so. I think you want your centre-half to be stronger. I've only seen it once or twice. Mm. It's a shame because, yeah, Pompey had enough chances to have this game wrapped up, it would seem, in the opening 45 minutes. And I think there has been a drop-off in terms of the intensity that Portsmouth have been closing from the front with. And I think that was evident last season in League One and the start of this season. But I think they've just probably retreated in recent weeks. And I think I probably said that on previous podcasts. But they actually went after Argyle here. I think there's probably an understanding that they're going to look to build a little bit more Argyle, and probably in their infancy of doing that, given what they were before, and Portsmouth got real joy nicking the ball in this game. Forced Argyle long, dealt with it, and then obviously the winning goal comes from just a punt downfield. So they managed it really well, Portsmouth, until that moment, really, and will be kicking themselves that they haven't got anything to show. And big pressure now on the Preston game that comes around really quickly at Fratton Park, a game which from the outside you would fancy maybe Portsmouth getting that maiden home win. But yeah, I mean, I don't think we've spoken since Argyle went to Elland Road and didn't have an attempt. I mean, that's the first time I've seen that. I think I saw a Chelsea Burnley game a couple of years ago. It evoked memories of where I think Burnley had a shot or an attempt in the last minute. I genuinely don't think I've ever seen that. So Argyle need to continue what they're doing at home and just reach for that better formula away from home to be more competitive.
Yeah, 23-0 it was at Leeds, wasn't it? In the shots, unbelievable. Just a quick one on Pompey. Obviously, they've been hampered with Colby Bishop, you know, with the heart surgery he's had to have. And, we hear he's back out on the grass now. He's making sort of baby steps in his recovery, which is brilliant news for him. But they didn't really commit, did they? The club. to going for it. I didn't think when in the summer. Yeah, you know, they signed a lot of what I would regard as risky signings, players that hadn't really had any proven record, certainly at the level. You know, Sorensen is one, I suppose, that's getting a little bit of stick, but you've got Sadie and obviously Yenge was there already. They've got youngster Mahoney, who's okay, you know, he's making his way, but it's a big ask, isn't it, at championship level for him to bang them in on a consistent basis. That is a real issue for Pompey moving forward. Just a quick one, my wife just popped in. She's wearing a new jumper and it says Mince Pie Appreciation Society on it. It's a lovely Christmas jumper, but it strikes me on the 7th of November that she's gone incredibly early here. I mean, when is it too early to wear a Christmas jumper? I mean,
7th of November. That's a three-match suspension. It's not even a straight red. Yeah. Well, six-game suspension. That's like when it goes to the different panel, you know, like for the major incidents. Osmaic territory.
Yeah, got to be the 1st of December. That's
I'm going to have to pass that on as soon as we finish there. Yeah, so six-game ban. Okay, she'll be delighted with that. She doesn't like football.
Quite fancy mince pie now, though, although it's too early for those two. Anyway, let's move on. Sheffield United have been flying of late. They left it late to clip the wings of the Robins of Bristol City, though. A 2-1 win at Ashton Gate came thanks to a 98th-minute winner from Harrison Burrows. I say thanks to Harrison Burrows, Clarkie. Also, perhaps a pat on the back from Chris Wilder to Rob Dickey. That was a rather silly sending off, wasn't it, deep into stoppage time?
Yeah, not great. not great, but I think it probably was, wasn't it? So, yeah, he's going to sit out a game. So that wasn't too clever from him. It's a brilliant win. Brilliant week, actually, for Sheffield United. I think to go to Blackburn, do a job on them, 2-0, and then to go to Bristol City, who haven't lost at home for a long, long time, since sort of Easter time, I don't think, is a fantastic thing for them. And to do it in the way they did it, with a late goal, lovely sort of touch, wasn't it, from Burrows to take him into the box and a perfect drive across the goalkeeper, real picture book goal. So yeah, and look, they did it on a night where I think Chris Wilder took a bit of a risk. He left out more for Tyrese Campbell, which isn't so much of a risk. Tyrese Campbell's been in decent form, but he left Arblaster and Raksaki out, two of the best players this season for the Blades. But yeah, it was no surprise they all came on. Those three were key for Moore on 58 minutes, and that kind of gave them a bit more of an edge towards the end of the game. Yeah, it was hard, I think, on Bristol City, who played well and shouldn't feel too disheartened by their display. But it's just one of those nights where Sheffield United will come away from it feeling so much better about their promotion prospects because they've dug in away from home against a top team. I think a top team at home, certainly. And they've got a late winner to see that. They'll feel on top of the world right now.
Yeah, well done to all those travelling away fans as well. It's a pretty long journey, but a worthwhile one. Also the case, Sam, for Wickham. We simply must talk about their 5-0 win at Stockport. It's put them top of League One. They were 3-0 up after 18 minutes. The only downside was that horrific green and white stripe kit. But goodness me, what a sensational effort this was from the chairboys.
Yeah, they're form sides in the country. Any division. Incredible attacking statistics. I think when you look at the side, I mean, enormous credit must go to Matt Bloomfield, especially when you consider that it wasn't, you know, immediately obvious what this team was going to become. I know it takes time, but I remember being there last year and thinking, God, this is a team that are being encouraged to play more possession after what they've been under Gareth Ainsworth, but they weren't entirely comfortable or maybe capable at the time. They were caught between the two styles. So I think the recruitment has been incredibly good. If you look at a number of these players that can now really handle taking the ball in tight spots in the midfield areas, you think of someone like Humphreys, who's affected games for Ipswich previously. Morley's been an excellent player for Bolton. They've got there now, and I think they've got different facets. They can be bold and playing behind because they've got pace up front in Udo and Kone, but they've also got the ability for those two to get on the ball and play a little bit more intricately. So Matt Bloomfield is onto a really good thing, and when you consider the strength of the table this year, it will be an incredible story, I think. If you know, is it his first full season? It certainly feels like he hasn't had the gig a long time, but if he can put together a team that's capable of challenging for automatic promotion, he deserves incredible credit. But if you look at the 11, they've done some stellar work in the recruiting.
Yeah, I was going to say exactly the same thing. They can do it all now. They got the technical players that they never used to have. They've kept the Wickham industry and team ethic, and then there's real power and athleticism about them in the forward areas. And then, you know, they looked hungry in this game. You know, they're winning the game 3-0 and they're still going, still making the runs. Cameron Humphreys, I think, deserves credit. He's playing really well at the minute. Delicious cross for Onyedimma to score his second goal. Lovely left foot curler. Would have loved to have produced that myself.
Second full season in charge for Matt Bloomfield, appointed February 2023. And just one of those nights for Stockport, I think. All right, that was our midweek roundup. We'll have a look ahead to a couple of weekend games next. And in the Championship, it's Watford versus Oxford, the Friday night offering. It's the first time they've met in a league game since 1999. I remember way back last week when we were saying Watford were rubbish away, and then they went and won 6-2 at Sheffield Wednesday on Saturday. They did lose at Swansea midweek without managing a shot on target. But they're at home in this game, Adrian, and they are good there. In fact, Tom Cleverley's yet to be beaten in a league game at Vicarage.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, I've watched them at Vicarage Road and in the flesh, and I really liked what I saw. Not always that secure defensively, but I like them in possession. You know, good fast football. The interplay's nice. They've got a lot of pace in forward areas. So, yeah, they've got a good thing going at home. No team actually in the Championship this season has won more points at home. There's a number of teams that have matched them on 16 points from home matches. So, yeah, they'll be looking to build on that. And they should win, I think. It's fair to say against an Oxford side that have only got 2 points on the road this season, still waiting for their first win. They've certainly been better on their own patch, Oxford. So, yeah, look, well played, Watford. I think the tactical question mark for Cleverley moving forward is, do I go with a back three, which is how we started the season, or do I stick with the back four that he used at Sheffield Wednesday, which obviously worked amazingly well. And then he tried it again at Swansea, and it didn't. And he kind of blamed himself for getting sucked in to just replicate it for that match, when maybe it would have been better to go the other way. So, yeah, that's the quandary moving forwards. But yeah, I think Watford on their own patch should sweep aside Oxford. And I say that reluctantly, because Oxford are always in every match they play. Look at their record down the season so far. I think their heaviest defeat is by 2 goals. And 12 of their last 14 matches, they've either drawn or won or lost by a single goal. So they're always involved in competitive matches, Oxford. I think they've settled in great at Championship level. But this feels like a tough test for them.
Yeah, heaviest away defeat, 2-0 at Sunderland, which is nothing to be ashamed of. All the other losses that they've had have been by just a single goal. What do you reckon is more likely, Sam? Watford getting promoted or Oxford staying up?
More likely. Oxford staying up.
Yeah, that's an easy one, Matt. Come on. Yeah.
Well, Watford are in the playoff places as we speak.
Oh, they're not going up, are they?
I think it's...
Clipping that up, by the way.
I don't want to talk for them, but I think just quite refreshing, isn't it, for Watford fans to certainly be going to the home games and enjoying themselves all of a sudden. Would have enjoyed going to Hillsborough, wouldn't they, the other day? I mean, where did that come from? Because Sheffield Wednesday brushed aside an albeit depleted Norwich, and I would expect that not to probably happen to Sheffield Wednesday again this season. So that was an incredible result, but they produced probably more in keeping with what they've been this season on the road, which is lacklustre in that defeat at Swansea. So, yeah, we'd expect them to improve here. And similarly, as Clarkey was talking about Cleverley's conundrum in terms of his setup, Oxford changed the other day in that victory over Hull to a back three, which I don't think we've seen too readily from them. Goodrum playing as part of a couple of number 10s, Greg Lee and the goal scorer Van Hest in the wing back position to combine for the goal. So, yeah, tactically changing it up in a game which they needed to win, I think, actually, Oxford, that one, after a little indifferent run. Harris is having a bit of a tough time in front of goal all of a sudden after his fast start and a first clean sheet in seven games as well. So that was much needed just to give them a little bit more belief, because it can often plateau, can't it, when a team's come up with the momentum and the boost of some not bright new additions in the summer, and you hit the ground running in the Championship, you can have that little drop off. So important win, and you know, we'll go into this game, I'm sure, confident they can get something, but you'd have to fancy Watford maybe by the odd goal.
All right, well, in League One, two teams, sans managers, square off at the Pirelli Stadium. Burton Albion against Shrewsbury Town. It's the division's bottom two. Burton, the only side in the EFL yet to win a game. They've only won two of their last 27 across last season. And this just squeezed past Scarborough in the cup last week. Sam, this has got all the makings of an absolute stinker.
Yeah, albeit I think, you know, Burton are probably playing some decent stuff. I know they're not winning games and not getting points, but it's not the Burton of old, is it? I think they've tried to evolve this year, so it would be counterproductive probably to start launching it and maybe being reliant on set pieces, because they probably don't have a squad with that makeup anymore. So it's going to be a tough gig for whoever takes on the reins there. Obviously got a point last time out. These are two really bad defensive sides. Obviously, Paul Hurst has vacated now, and this is a squad with all these kind of markings across it, you know, in terms of players that have been at Shrewsbury before, Nsiala, Aaron Pierre to name two. It's got a really familiar look to it, I think, Shrewsbury, when you look at them. And I would say they've got slightly better attacking stats than Burton, but highest XG conceded in the league. You know, no surprise really that they are where they are. So it's going to be low scoring, and their seasons aren't going to be defined by this encounter, but it'd be good for confidence, wouldn't it, to get one over a relegation rival at this stage.
It's a game that both could do with winning, to put it very, very mildly, Clarkey.
Yeah.
Shrewsbury, the Paul Hurst thing, never go back. I mean, we're going to talk about Doncaster soon, and it's kind of working for Grant McCann there. But where do they go next? I know Mark Kennedy and Gareth Ainsworth are among the favourites. It's a firefighter you want at this stage, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it might be one for Ainsworth. It could be. I mean, Mark Kennedy, his reputation has been damaged a little bit by what happened at Swindon, and you know, his communication, you know, with the public hasn't been great. I think that might deter suitors from going for him, maybe. It feels like they need to shore up their defence massively. I mean, Sam said it, worst XG against Shrewsbury. I mean, Shrewsbury, they've never really scored that many goals, have they? Not in recent seasons. But one thing you can count on is that they're tough to beat. You know, they're involved in a lot of low-scoring matches. Well, this season they've lost that, haven't they? So that's the reason Hurst has lost his gig. So they need someone to provide a bit more defensive stability before they move on. I fancy Burton in this game. I think that Burton will get their first win. According to the numbers, they've let in 6.5 more goals than they should have done. And I think that with Orsi up front, they've got a player that can sort of, you know, cause problems at that level. He's got five. Hopefully, from their perspective, he can deliver this weekend. It feels like a must win for Burton, doesn't it? If he can't win this one against managerless Shrewsbury, who keep giving up goals, then they might as well sort of start planning for League Two.
Where we find currently Notts County and Doncaster Rovers. Notts making the short trip up the A1 to take on Donny. Only goal difference separating them. Notts are third. Rovers are fourth. Doncaster only won one of their last four at home, Adrian. They probably need to sort that out if they want to get promoted.
Yeah, they've sort of lost their way in front of goal. Like Luke Molyneux and Billy Sharp had a blinding start to the season, didn't they? They're absolutely ripping teams to shreds, and that's fizzled out a little bit. They've been, I think teams are going there to the keep mode of giving Donny a bit more respect now, and off the back of what they did in the second half of last season as well. And they're making it tough to break them down. So yeah, they've got, but it'll be different with Notts County, who will come and want the ball and happy to take the fight to Doncaster. So it might make for a slightly better game. You know, two decent teams here, really. Two teams that I would expect to be in the top seven come the end of the season. And for Notts County, I think they're doing all right, you know, considering they lost Jody Jones to that fractured shin. He's out until the new year. Jody Jones was the assist machine, wasn't he? He was the one that was making it all happen, providing chances and goals for fun. And And you can't really replace him if you're Notts County. So it's the goals have slowed down, which means they've had to improve defensively. And in fairness to Stuart Maynard, compared to the team he inherited, you know, they are much better without the ball. So I've got a sneaky feeling maybe that Notts can go to Donny and maybe nick something.
Yeah, players returning. I think that's the important thing for Notts County after they've been, you know, really disrupted by injuries and not starting games well. I think there's an inevitability that teams are going to be really aggressive against them because of the way they shipped goals last season, which was their Achilles heel. So naturally, I think when the game opens up a little bit, they start to play through teams. So maybe just getting, you know, picked off a little bit early when teams are aggressive in terms of the way they close. And for Donny, the one thing I noticed, they've been so consistent, I think, start of the season in their shape, kind of 4-3-3, and have deviated away from that in recent weeks. And Clarkey spoke about Gibson and Molyneux. That's kind of been broken up in some of the fixtures where they were really prospering in the wide position. So, yeah, they were very much 4-3-3 with 2-8 start of the season. But they've played some different combinations recently, I think partly down to unavailability in the defence where they've had to go with a back three on occasion. So, no, a really good-looking game. And, yeah, I would expect these two teams to absolutely be in the shake-up at the end of the season.
Notts have won the last three meetings between them, including 3-1 at Doncaster last season. All right, we're on the home stretch now. A couple of bits before we finish. Let's do our traditional predictions. Last week, me and Adrian got a point. Sam didn't get any points.
So
we are making up some grounds here.
Deficit now, chaps? Because I'm going to have to look back over them as well. I thought I got a point. I'm going to go back on it. I'm going to listen to the podcast today.
We've got the numbers in front of us, mate. You didn't get any right. Full stop.
I'll still go back and just check. Just to make ultra sure.
It's Sam 27, me 19, Matt 12. So you know you got a good lead, but I feel like you've hit a bit,
wheels
a bit
have come
of fatigue.
Off.
Yeah, I feel like you hit a bit of fatigue, mate.
I mean, all it takes is for me to get three perfect scores and I'm right back in it, which is definitely going to happen this week. Sunderland Coventry is the first game that I picked. I mean, this has now got a different slant to it, hasn't it, based on what we've been talking about. Sam, I reckon you're going to go for a home win here.
There was a 5-4 in this fixture. Do you remember it? I think it was 1920. season. Not
2019. I was gonna say no, I don't remember it.
It stinks of goals, didn't it? But Sunderland have had 2-0-0s. It's horrible. 2-1 Sunderland.
Lucky.
Just written 2-1 down. Just wrote it. Do you know what? I think Cough might surprise everyone. They're gonna dig in here. Whoever's in charge. Sunderland are without Joe Bellingham, aren't they? Don't know if Chris Riggs is going to be all right, but they've got a few suspensions sort of pending. Sunderland 1, Coventry 1.
Wow, okay. I'll go for 2-0 to Sunderland. Stockport Bolton, big North West clash. What's going to happen in that League One encounter, Adrian?
Bolton are going to win, and they're going to win by 2-0. Stockport aren't going to be good. But they won't be as bad as they were against Wickham. But Bolton, for me, are just going through the gears at the moment. They're looking all right under Ian Everett. I think that it's a bit of a derby, isn't it, Stockport-Bolton? I think it'd be, yeah, for that reason, good crowd, good atmosphere, but Bolton to show their class and win 2-0.
Sam?
I can't disagree with the thought process there. I'm fully on board with it, but just for the beauty of the sport and the competitive edge, yeah, Stockport to improve. No, they have to give the supporters a performance here, don't they, in the aftermath of the 5-0 midweek defeat. 1-1.
Okay. I'm going to go for 2-2. Point apiece. We've gone for Doncaster versus Notts again in League Two, and I'm going to go first with this one, and I'm going to say that it's going to be a repeat of last season's score, and Notts are going to win it by 3-1. What say you, Adrian?
I fancy Notts County as well. I said it in the preview. So I think they're going to go there, score, and then control the game and keep Donny at arm's length. They're going to win the game by 1-0.
Nice. Sam?
Just seeing how many goals they've scored each.
now that he's hit a bit of a wall, he's starting to take it seriously, isn't he? Look,
you both gone for Notts?
Yeah.
2-2.
Okay, probably not a bad shout that. We'll let you know how we get on next week. Before we do Tweet of the Week, let me remind you once more that our friends at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £50 and 50 free spins. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions/sports-up-2-50. Again, the link there will be in the description of the show. It's 18+, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Check out gamcare.org. They are the leading provider for gambling support and run the National Gambling Helpline. Finally then, before we go, it's Tweet of the Week time, and this one comes from Wickham's Richard Kone, who scored 2 of the 5 goals that they plundered at Edgeley Park midweek. He is, quote, tweeting the official account, which has a top emoji. We're Wickham Wanderers, and tonight we're top of the league. And Richard says, incredible night. What a team performance. Incredible support from the fans again. Clean sheet. Let's go again on Saturday. No rest. 3 flames emoji, 2 blue hearts emojis. The reason I picked this one, Clarky, is because I love the enthusiasm, and I can picture Richard tapping this out in the away dressing room / on the coach, just absolutely buzzing at his brace and wanting to tell the world.
Yeah, but it's missing... How many full stops is it missing? I mean,
a lot.
I think it might be missing 5 full stops, or at least a comma or a double colon. You know, there's no grammar in here from Kone, but like you say, the adrenaline is pumping through his body. It's coursing through his veins. He's got no time. He's not entertaining the thought of a comma or a full stop, is he? He just wants to get the message out there. And I admire him for that. So well played, Richard. Grammatically shocking, but it's fine by me.
Does the endearing nature of it, Sam, mean that we can forgive the grammatical errors?
I think he needs forgiven for everything at the moment. I mean, he's a joy, isn't he, on the pitch? Phil Catchpole, who does the media duties at Wickham Wanderers, I believe said in his commentary that he was playing for Athletic Newham a year ago, this boy, and he's up to 10 goals, isn't he? Athletic Newham. I don't know what step that is, but it could be double figures, couldn't it? So that's, incredible rise for him. So maybe it was a throwback to the old days. Maybe he'd had a few cans on the coach. They still do that, Clarkie, after a 5-0 thumping away victory? I think not, but...
Yeah, I think not, but I think they should bring that back. I think there's certain things, like, I know that the body is a temple, and I know that you should look after it, but... You should also celebrate 5-0 away wins with a crate of Heineken or something like that, shouldn't you? I mean, it has to be done.
I can't see the driver stopping off on a tricky junction for Matt Bloomfield to run off, only to return with the crate.
At Southend, honestly, I don't. It's probably the same for you. But sat at Southend, we had a lot of drinkers. There's a guy, Andy Thompson, terrific striker, excellent frontman, no fat on him at all. He would regularly fall off the coach, blind drunk, like I couldn't walk. Drive home. No, I'm joking. But like, it was, you know, different days. You know,
washed down with a microwaved curry, no doubt.
Always a microwave meal. But yeah, so many players got absolutely obliterated on those away journeys. And we never won 5-0 away, ever.
After a 1-0 reverse at Morecambe.
Oh, happy days. What a way to end the show. By the way, Athletic Newham, they play in the Essex Senior League, which is Step 5 or Level 9. They also have based their club badge on Atletico Madrid and their kit as well. By the look
got
of it.
Got to swat up on my steps, haven't I?
Yeah, really? you got to get down to Parslow's Park in Dagenham if you want to watch them. But they're not in the Football League, so we'll never talk about them again. But we will talk about loads of other teams when we return next week. Join us for that if you can. Until then, bye for now.